skills. What are some prominent examples where Shomei HaKohanah is often utilized in our halachic lives? Kriyas HaTorah is an interesting question, actually, whether that's a good example. It might be. What? Megillah is definitely, right? We hear, so we have an obligation, all of us, to read the Megillah on Purim, yet very few of us actually do read physically the Megillah. We go to shul and we hear the Megillah read, and because of this concept of Shomei HaKohanah, so that counts for us.
Shofar
is an interesting question also, because that goes to the issue of what exactly the mitzvah of shofar is. It happens to be a machlokas rishonim. If the mitzvah of shofar is to blow the shofar, in which case it sounds like there's something similar going on, or is the mitzvah of shofar to hear the shofar, in which case we don't need any fancy Shomei HaKohanah concepts. We're going to shul listening to the shofar. So shofar is an interesting machlokas, just like Kriyas HaTorah is also a discussion how exactly it works. Megillah, so far we know that is the case. When it comes to Megillah, it's clear that our mitzvah is to read the Megillah, and yet most of us don't actually read it. Most of us fulfill it through this mechanism of Shomei HaKohanah. You all just yield to your bracha for that? It's a question, let's talk about that. Okay, so where else do we see it coming up?
Kiddush.
So Kiddush is also a pretty frequent example. Kiddush, there is an obligation on all adult men and women to make Kiddush Friday nights, B'nai Torah. And yet, it's usually done one person per household, one person per table sometimes, even in a very large room. Could be one for many, many people. And once again, there, Shomei HaKohanah is at play. So Shomei HaKohanah is a fascinating topic. And I'd like to spend a few minutes trying to understand how it works. And what we'll see is that there are a range of possibilities how it works. And it's a question behind the question, as we'll see if we have enough time. And it's behind major machlokas throughout Jewish history. And we will go chronologically backwards to try to uncover that machlokas. All right, you ready for this trip? Ready to see where this goes? So the concept of Shomei HaKohanah is a Gemara in Sukkah, which is why we chose this as a topic. I think it's a little bit beyond where you guys were up to, but you're almost at the end of your month, so you're not going to get this far anyway. So the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, the Gemara there tells us that there is a concept of Shomei HaKohanah, and it looks to a story in Tanakh to teach the existence of this principle. So what we would like to try to figure out is what exactly is going on. How was a mitzvah fulfilled through Shomei HaKohanah? What does it mean to say that here the Torah tells me I have to make Kiddush, Chazal tell me that I have to read the Megillah, and yet at the same time we're also told I don't have to actually make Kiddush, I don't have to actually read the Megillah, but Shomei HaKohanah, that I am in fulfillment if I just hear Kiddush, if I just hear the Megillah. How does that work? And before looking at any other sources, we could just simply try to translate the phrase. If you think about it, the phrase Shomei HaKohanah could be translated two different ways. And just to get one issue out of the way, so the use of the word ona is probably a little bit surprising, right? Because what does ona usually mean? Answer. And here we probably would have expected a word a little bit more like what? Kore maybe, yeah, or Omer, Medaber. We're basically comparing the Shomei and the Ona. Right? So the Ona, I would have thought some kind of speech word like Omer or Medaber. Ona is an interesting choice. We're not going to spend too much time on that. But for all intents and purposes, let's assume the verb could have been Amira, could have been Dibur, could have been Ania, whatever it is. But there's still two different ways to relate to the phrase Shomei HaKohanah. You think, how would you translate that into English? Okay, assuming Ania just means speech, but how would you translate the whole phrase into English? Yes, sir? What's your name?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, correct. Yes. So how would you translate it?
Hearing is like I actually said something, or hearing is like I'm yotze with a person.
Are you doing those two different things?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say, what was the first one?
Hearing is like I actually said it myself.
Okay, hearing is like I actually said it myself. So then how would you translate the words literally, if that's what you're trying to get at?
Hearing is like saying.
Right. Compare verbs. Shamea is ka'onet. To listen is as to speak. We'll compare the verbs. Or, what's your second possibility?
Hearing is if I said it, I guess.
Well, to sharpen it a little bit, maybe what we mean is maybe we're not comparing the actions. Maybe we're comparing the people. Right? A listener is a shamea. Right? And a speaker is an onet. So maybe it means ha shomeya ke haonet. The one who is listening is equivalent to the one speaking. So those may sound similar. It's maybe a subtle difference. We'll see. It's quite a significant difference. And again, what are the two possibilities? The act of hearing is like the act of speaking, or the one speaking is like the one hearing, and vice versa. How does this affect them? So let's take a trip backwards through history. There was a major machlokas not so long ago about the following point. The Beis Halevi quotes an opinion that he disagrees with. The Beis Halevi, you know, is the original Rabbi Yehoshua ben Soloveitchik, or Soloveitchik's great-grandfather. And he wrote a Sefer of Shailos and Tshuvos. This is not where this is from. This is actually from his Sefer on Chumash, in the section about Tanakh. Just so you have a doubly hard time finding it. So it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's a random paragraph published in the Sefer after he finishes talking about Chumash, and then he starts talking about Tanakh. After that, there's somewhat of a randomly placed paragraph where he quotes an anonymous Chacham who he disagrees with. So I'm going to tell you guys a secret who the anonymous Chacham is, even though basically he doesn't say it. It's what you're specially privileged to. The anonymous Chacham was Reb Shlomo Akona Vilna. Reb Shlomo Akona Vilna had an interpretation of a Mishnah in Megillah. I don't know what the sources are, what's here, what's not. But, no, not here. So, the Mishnah in Megillah talks about the person who gets maftir. Nowadays, maftir is a big cover. But in the time of the Gemara, maftir was actually considered to be not the best aliyah, because it's not one of the big seven. So you need a consolation prize. So there are extra kibudim that were given to the one who has maftir. And one of them, says the Mishnah, is he gets to duchen. He gets to do birchas kohen. So what's difficult about that? Say, okay, this guy, he gets to do birchas kohen. Well, one, the biggest problem, maybe he's not a kohen. Right? If he's not a kohen, then he can't do it. And what if he is a kohen? Then does it make sense?
He's doing it anyway.
He's
doing it anyway.
He's doing it anyway, right? When you see birchas kohen happening in America, we only see it on Yantiv. But you see, it's all the kohen go up. Right? So what does it mean? Oh, this guy, he gets to do birchas kohen. So the question of what if he's not a kohen, that we can't answer so easily. But the question of what's so special, they're all doing it anyway. So that, says the Binyan Shlomo, says Reb Shlomo Mevilna, he thinks what they're talking about is that maybe they used to do Birchas Kohanim through Shomei Kohanim. It's not like what we see nowadays, that all the Kohanim go up. But maybe they would have one Kohen get up, and he would recite Birchas Kohanim, and the other Kohanim would fulfill their obligation through listening. That was his suggestion, and he recorded that he's actually seen this in some places. That was the whole position he was putting forward. And the Beis Halevi disagreed. The Beis Halevi said, no, it's not possible. You cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim through Shomei Kohanim. Shomei Kohanim doesn't work by everything, only works by certain things, and this is not one of them. Why not? What's wrong? So here, the explanation can be said a few ways also. We have layers within layers. So we'll say one way of understanding what the Beis Halevi meant. We'll mention in a few minutes that he may have meant something else. But what the Beis Halevi is quoted as saying is that you can't use Shomei Kohanim for something that is not purely speech. If it's speech plus anything else, then Shamei Ka'ona is not going to work. Because all Shamei Ka'ona does is it means that the listener is considered as if he's speaking, which was our first translation, right? Shmiya Ka'anir, the act of listening is like the act of speaking. Okay, so it's as if they're speaking. But that's not enough for Brichas Ka'onim. Brichas Ka'onim has an additional detail. What else do the Kohen have to do besides just speaking? Is there a way that he has to speak?
Koram.
The Koram, exactly. You could have thought also that he has to raise his hands, which we call Nesias Kapayim, but that's interesting, he doesn't focus on that. But he focuses on what Jonathan said, that it has to be the Koram. Has to be a loud voice, and that's not going to transfer to the listener. All the listener gets credit for is as if he's saying the words. But it's not enough to say the words. The words have to be said loudly, and he's not doing that. Not even whispering, not making any sound at all. So far, so good? So essentially, how does the Beis Halevi translate the phrase? Shomea Ka'ona means the act of listening is like the act of speaking, but not more than that. And therefore, it's not going to be effective. However, many others disagree. And prominently among them, more recently the Beis Halevi, was the Chazon Ish, lived less than 100 years ago. And the Chazon Ish wrote that that's not what Shomea Ka'ona means. Shomea Ka'ona shouldn't be translated as listening is like speaking. We should translate it as the listener is like the speaker. Ha Shomea Ke Ha'ona. And essentially it means that one who listens to a mitzvah has got to certainly start off as primarily a speech-related mitzvah, or else this isn't going to make sense. Right? You can't apply this to matzah, for example. Got to be something that is rooted in speech. But a mitzvah that is speech-oriented, you can listen to that mitzvah and you can get the credit of the mitzvah as it's being performed by the speaker. So if the speaker has all the conditions in place, then you also have all the conditions in place. So if the speaker is doing it b'kol rav, so it's considered as if you're also doing it b'kol rav. The Chazon Ish points out that if that's not true, then the mitzvahs that we usually rely on Shomea Ka'ona for, we're going to have a hard time with. Right, what were the two examples that we gave before that Shomea Ka'ona is utilized most commonly?
Megillah and Shofar.
Megillah and Kiddush, we like that. Shofar mentioned a little bit of Mahlok. I think you suggested it was a good suggestion, but too much Lundish for it right now. But I'll have to come back a little time and talk about that. Let's say Megillah and Kiddush. Megillah has to be read from a kosher Megillah. Right? So all the people who come to shul and listen to the one reading, are they all holding kosher Megillahs? Most of them not, right? Most are sitting with printed Megillahs. So if all Shomei Ka'ona does is if they're talking, so then they're saying the Megillah by heart. They're saying the Megillah from a printed Megillah. That's not going to be enough. You have to assume that Shomea is Kehaona, that when you are listening to the one reading the Megillah, then if the guy who's reading it is reading from a kosher Megillah, so then the listener is also credited with a reading from a kosher Megillah, even though he's not doing that. Or, let's go by Kiddush, right? So Kiddush, you need to be holding a cup of wine. When many people listen to one Kiddush, we don't necessarily insist that they all hold their own cup of wine. Why not? That's not an act of listening. So you have to assume that we're understanding here, HaShomea KeHa'ona, the listener is like the speaker. If the speaker who's making Kiddush is doing so over a cup of wine, then the listener is also credited with a cup of wine. So far, so good? Yeah, makes sense? Everybody following? Okay, so this seems to be a machlokes about the first question we started with. How do you translate Shomea Ka'ona? Are we comparing actions listening is like speaking? Or are we comparing people, the listener is like the speaker? And that seems to inform this machlokesh between the Beis HaLevi and the Chazon Ish. And that the Beis HaLevi was apparently saying, we compare actions, Shmia is like Aniyah, but no more. And the Chazon Ish was saying, no, we're comparing people. The listener is like the speaker, so whatever the speaker is doing, the listener has that too. Okay? Now, parenthetically, I should mention, for the sake of accuracy, that there are those who disputed that the Beis HaLevi ever meant this. And a number of Svarim happen to be particularly those closest to the Beis HaLevi and the Brisker family. They all claim that this is a misinterpretation, and that the Beis HaLevi didn't mean to say that any time there's anything besides speech, it's not going to come along. And he's not going to have a problem with the Kiddush cup or the Megillah. What he meant was that the factor of Kol Rav requires that the mitzvah tells us it has to be communicated to the tzibur. That the Kohen has to not only say words, but that those words have to be communicated to the people. So if he's not actually saying anything, he's just thinking them. So then there isn't going to be any communication to the people. So then the mitzvah is fundamentally flawed. But if the mitzvah was really a mitzvah of speech, it just requires a cup of wine or a kosher Megillah or something like that, the Beis HaLevi would agree that could work. So it's a little bit of a question how much the Beis HaLevi is being fairly interpreted here. But on the surface, this is a possible machlokes. So now if we go back in history, we can find that this machlokes really happened before. So first, let's go back about 100 years earlier. There was a machlokes between Rabbi Yaakov Emden and the Taz. Not exactly talking to each other, but is that here? I don't remember what's on this list. I have to forgive me. But there was a machlokes between the Taz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden about the following point. Somebody is blind. Can he get an aliyah? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden thought not. Why? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden, by the way, just to place him in history, because I'm going back about 100 years now, Rabbi Yaakov Emden died in 1776. That's how you remember when the revolution was. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden is before the Beis HaLevi. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that if a person is blind, he's not going to be able to get an aliyah. Because, how is that going to work? What does an aliyah really require? Aliyah, to the laning, doesn't just mean making the brachos, right? Told, when you make a brachos on an aliyah, so you're supposed to also lane along with the balkarit. You're supposed to lane more softly than he does. But that's part of what an aliyah requires. So if the individual can't see the Torah, so yes, you could have said Shomea Kahuna, that because the Baal Koreh is laning, so that will be effective. But, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, no, it's not going to work, because it'll be as if he's laning by heart, because he's not going to actually see the Torah. And if he doesn't see the Torah, so laning by heart doesn't count. So, functionally speaking, it's not possible for him to have an aliyah. However, the Taz said differently, and this is the way most assume the halacha nowadays, that it is possible for somebody who's blind to get an aliyah. Now, once upon a time, when we didn't have a Baal Koreh, so it used to be that the one getting the aliyah was supposed to get up there and lean. But nowadays, we do have a Baal Koreh. So he does all the laning. So, luckily, it's possible now also for somebody who's blind to get an aliyah because he can use Shomei Ka'ona and listen to the Baal Koreh's laning. So you see, the Taz disagrees with the premise of the documentary and assumes that if Shomei Ka'ona is in effect, so then whatever the speaker is doing the listener is credited with that too. So therefore, it could work. So here you find it's the same machlokas. Rabbi Yaakov Emden is understanding how is he translating Shemaya Kohen? He's comparing verbs. Shmiya is like aniya, listening is like talking. But here you need more than talking, you need to read from the Sefer Torah. So who would Rabbi Yaakov Emden line up with in our previous machlokas? The Beis Halevi, right? It's not good enough for Brechas Kohanim because you don't have a loud voice. It's not good enough for Kriyas HaTorah because you don't have reading from the Torah itself. While the Taz would say no. How is he translating the phrase?
Shomea
Kehauna. The listener is like the speaker. So therefore, it's good enough to listen to somebody laning from a Sefer Torah, just like it's good enough for one Kohen to listen to one Kohen who's doing it with a Kol Rav. Who's up first? Okay, Jonathan?
Please.
Okay, beautiful. What's your name?
Sam.
Sam, yes.
Can you medayek, like, more like the Beis Halevi and Rabbi Emden, that the lashon of Shomea Kona and not Shomea Veroa Kona, Shomea is like Kona Uke, like Roa, meaning that if someone, if part of the, at least for the Mikra Megillah situation, I don't know necessarily about for Chris Kona, but you have, or Chris Torah, when it the blind person, it has to be read off the cloth. You can say
in
that
case like, of the Gemara was talking about reading from a Sefer Torah. So.
Yeah, so like you can't, you even if you just hear it, and even if you want to say that you're like the person, you're only like the person in the aspect that he's saying it now, but you're not like the person in the aspect that he's reading it also. I mean, you don't have
that. So that is how they understand it.
How do you get around that? I'm saying like it's pretty, the Lashon is very much in the favor.
Maybe. That's one way to interpret. But what we were also mentioning is that...
No, it could just be the verbs. The verbs also don't say...
So the first way is the verbs. That they are saying like the verbs. They're saying that Shemitah is Kenya.
I mean, even if it's people, then like person is only similar in that... You say even the entire person, not just in that aspect?
It could be, the aspect of this mitzvah. But they're saying, regarding this mitzvah, Hashemeya is linked to Ha'ona. So whatever the Ona is doing... The one
for that one thing.
This mitzvah, yeah. This mitzvah.
No, even within that mitzvah, only for that one... function of the mitzvah, not
necessarily. Maybe, but I don't know if there's any reason to say that. I mean, that's definitely the way they seem to understand it, but I don't know if it's any less valid of an interpretation. They seem equally plausible grammatically. You would say that listening is like speaking, or that the listener is connected to the speaker, and therefore if the speaker is doing it fully, then the listener is credited with the whole package. And we'll try to explain a little bit more what the basis for saying that is. But let's go back one more stage in history, now a few hundred years before this. And we'll see that this machlokas was already a machlokas in a very different application between Rashi and Tosfos. Tosfos is the Maseches Sukkah and the Maseches Brachos. I'm pretty sure that's got to be on this list. Something is. Yeah. Kind of. Somewhere. Alright, it's somewhere here. So, yeah, 4 and 5, okay. So, and 2, 3, 4, and 5, that's what we're talking about. Okay, what did you get? Fine, so the question is like this. What happens if you're in shul and they're up to Kaddish or Kaddish, but you are a little behind and you are still in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei? So you have a conflict now, because you can't interrupt your Shemoneh Esrei in the middle. But normally you'd have a mitzvah to answer Kaddish or Kedusha. So what should you do? So Rashi is of the opinion that I have a great suggestion. We have the magic of Shomei Kohanim. Why don't you just pause in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei? You won't answer, you'll just listen. And you'll be able to accomplish both. You won't interrupt your Shemoneh Esrei, but you'll fulfill the mitzvah of answering Kaddish. That was Rashi's suggestion. Tosfos in the two places. Tosfos says that's a terrible idea. Because here, the whole thing you're trying to avoid is talking in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. And if you're telling me you're going to utilize Shemaya Ka'oneh, so what does that mean? It means that it says if you are talking in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. So that's a terrible idea. Better that you shouldn't stop and listen. Because if you do stop and listen, then it will be Shemaya Ka'oneh. Shemaya Ka'oneh is exactly what you don't want. So what's the machlokas here? So the machlokas seems to be, as many have pointed out, that it goes back to our original question. And this is a very different application than the first two examples that we saw. But essentially, it's the same issue. Do we say Shomea is like Oneh, listening is like speaking? Or do we say that listening creates the link to the speaker, so you are credited with his mitzvah? Which one do you think Tosfos is assuming? Start with the second position. What's Tosfos' position? Listening is as if you're speaking. And therefore, that's too much. You're not allowed to speak. And if listening is like speaking, so it's the same thing as speaking. While Rashi apparently understands it differently, and this requires a little more explanation, that Rashi is saying we're not comparing verbs. It's not that speaking is considered to be like listening and vice versa. So if you're listening, it's the same thing as speaking and it's absent. But rather, what it is you are linked to the speaker. And one way to fulfill a mitzvah of speech is through listening. So maybe indeed it's like Rashi hopes for. This is the magic path. You're not actually speaking, so you're not being mafsik. But you're still able to be yotzei the mitzvah because listening is like speaking. The listener is credited with the mitzvah of the speaker. So it seems like the same question about how to translate the phrase is also behind this machlokas before all the ones we've seen so far, going back now 1,000 years to Rashi and Tosfos. So what we've seen here is three examples of this question. Do you say listening is exactly like speaking? In which case, Tosfos would tell you it's a hefsek. Rabbi Yaakov Emden would tell you a blind man can't read from the Torah because it's only as if he's reading by heart. And the Beis Halevi would tell you duchening, brichas konim can't work because it's only for speech and not for loud speech. Or do we say that no, the listener is connected to the speaker, and that's the position of Rashi, that you can fulfill a mitzvah even without actually speaking, as long as you're listening. And it's okay if you can't see the Torah, as long as the Baal Koreh is reading from Kosher Sefer Torah. And it's okay if you're not speaking B'kol Rom, as long as the main Kohen is speaking B'kol Rom. So here we see three instances where all seems to be the same question. So, yes, sir?
Isn't the machlokas before when you said between Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Taz? Can you just say that they're not arguing about whether or not what the nature of Shemei Ka'oneh is? You say that they both agree that Shemei Ka'oneh is like I'm actually the person. The question is that if I'm actually able to do myself, mm-hmm. like a form of sleepless, am I actually able to do myself? I can't do myself.
Okay, that's a good question. It's interesting why that's not brought up here, because I was about to mention something else which does involve that. So it's interesting why it isn't invoked in that context. But this Rashi and Tosfos about what do you do in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, there is a third view. It's a third view in the Rishonim. It's the Shiboli Haleket, who says they're both wrong. Rashi is wrong and Tosfos is wrong. Because, says the Shiboli Haleket, it doesn't even work to have Shemei Ka'oneh in this case. Why? Because it's a principle, it's not exactly the one you're alluding to, but it's similar, it might be relevant. There is a principle in general that, familiar with the idea of kolaroi lebila in bila makeves, what about that? The idea is that when you have a lechatchila b'diavad, sometimes you have a mitzvah, and the mitzvah should ideally be done a certain way, lechatchila. But b'diavad, it's okay if you don't have that. But the Gemara says that element that you can do without, that the bedieved you don't have to have. It has to at least be possible. If it's not possible, then it is ma'akev. Then you can't live without it. You can't live without the possibility of it. You can live without the actual it, but you can't live without it being possible. So, in this case, the Shiboli Aleket says, in order for Shemeyev to own it to work, so it has to at least be possible for you to do the mitzvah yourself. So then, if you can do the mitzvah yourself, so then, with the advent, you can have somebody else do it for you. But if it's impossible, then you can't work even with the advent this way. So says the Shiboli Aleket, he's saying a couple of chidushim here, because here he is extending possibility to halachic possibility. It's physically possible for you to answer Shemoneh Esrei. But because you are in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei and you can't interrupt, so it's halachically impossible. So says the Shiboli Aleket, therefore it can't work through Shemaya Ka'ona either. It's a problem of Kalaroi Ligid. That position was argued on by the Shagas Aryeh. Shagas Aryeh in Simen Vav, source 6, not spelled out, but in source 6, Shagas Aryeh in Simen Vav talks about whether somebody who is mute, can he fulfill Kriya Shema through Shomei Ka'ona, through listening to somebody else. So there he is talking about physical impossibility. It's impossible for this person to talk. But he doesn't accept the premise of the Shiboli Aleket. He doesn't think the whole concept is applicable here. Why not? Any idea why not? It's going to be an important step, actually, in this discussion. It's because the premise is, when you have the lechatchila and the b'diavet, so it has to be possible at least to do the lechatchila. So what's the assumption of the application? He's assuming that Shomei Ka'ona is b'diavet. Did anyone ever tell you that? That when you go to shul on Purim, really you should be laying for yourself and only to the evidence, you don't say it through listening to somebody else? We don't assume like that, Ba'alah. We assume that Shemei Ka'ona is an equally valid approach to doing it yourself. It's an alternate path that is just as good. So therefore, it's not to the evidence. So to apply the whole concept of it has to be at least possible to do the lechatchila version. So that's not relevant to Shemei Ka'ona. So therefore, he disagrees with the Shiboli Aleket, and he thought it is possible for the mute person to be yotze Kriya Shema through Shemei Ka'ona. Now, parenthetically, on top of that, the Vilna Gaon disagreed with him, because the Vilna Gaon thought Kriya Shema could be done with Shemei Ka'ona. That's a whole different discussion. We'll see if we have time for that. Bye.
Doesn't Tosos quote Rashi, or explain Rashi, that Aniyah Hashivitz Fei Mitzvah?
Yes, that's interesting. So it sounds like Tosos maybe disagrees a little bit. That Tosos thinks that there is a Lechafil in the B'diavit. Or a Hidr Mitzvah, in the sense to say it yourself. And if we have time, we'll try to explain that a little bit. Okay, how much time do we have? Okay. So, hopefully enough time, because I want to take this whole discussion to a second stage. Okay, and so far, that was phase one. Phase one was this question: how do we translate Shomei Ka'ona? Are we comparing verbs? Are we comparing people? And we saw these three examples of why it makes a difference. We saw three disputes which seem to hinge on this. I should also mention the Rambam. While we're here, the Rambam in source 8 might reflect both possibilities. So we talk about Amen. We tend to identify the word Amen with Shomei Ka'ona. I want to be Yosef Bracha with Shomei Ka'ona, make sure to say Amen. Right? That's how I usually thought. But the truth is, the concept of Shomei Ka'ona is not really about Amen. And Amen is actually something beyond Shomei Ka'ona. So if you look at the language of the Rambam here, it's in source 8, it's the first thing we look at inside. Kala Shomei Bracha Mera Brachos, Yitchilas Aviyat Sofa, you hear a whole Bracha. So you listen to a whole bracha and you have intent to be fulfillment of the bracha, you are yotzeh. Even without saying amen. Amen is not necessary for Shemei Ka'ona. They're not the same thing. You can listen to a bracha V'yotzeh, it's not about saying amen. V'chol ha'ona amen after ha'mevarech, whoever also says amen, ha'rezeh ku mevarech, then that is like the one making the bracha. So this is a very interesting Rambam, because you see, he's actually reflecting both stages of what we've been talking about. There's two different levels here. That if you listen to a bracha, you're yotzeh. What is that? That is shomea ka'ona, meaning listening is like speaking. Right? That if you listen to the words, it's as if you said it. But if you answer amen, actually, you should probably say it the other way around. Listen to what you're yotzeh. It's really comparing people. So if you listen to the bracha, you are yotzeh. You're in fulfillment. But if you say amen, amen takes on the meaning of whatever was said before. Right? So you said amen, then it's as if you actually said the words. So there's two stages. First stage is, if you just listen to the bracha, shemeya ka'ona, it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah. If you say amen, it's as if you actually said it. Interesting. So let's try to take this now to the next phase. Our two possibilities. Are we comparing verbs or are we comparing people? What's the question behind that question? Let's go a little deeper. So you could say the question that is beneath the whole surface here is, how exactly does Shemeya Ka'ona work? What is the operating system for Shemeya Ka'ona? Let's assume for a second, although you might challenge the assumption, but let's assume that Shemeya Ka'ona is piggybacking off some previous invention. That there is some other mechanism in halacha that is the operating system for Shemeya Ka'ona that lets it work. What would that be? There are at least two possibilities. What would you say? Sorry?
Shlichus.
So Shlichus, that's a good possibility. What else is a possibility? That's one of them. What's another one? Other one's a little less well known. There is a concept, we'll talk about it first. There is a Gemara Maseches Brachos on Daf Chaf, that's here somewhere, which tells us that there is a concept, the last line on page 3, there is a concept of hirhur kedibur, that thinking about something is equivalent to saying it. Clearly only under certain circumstances, but at least on some level, it's possible for thought to be equated to speech. So maybe that's what's going on here. Since if I think about something, it's as if I'm saying it. If I'm listening to somebody saying it, so then I'm thinking about it while I'm listening. So maybe I'll be in fulfillment then. So before I answer the question, those are two possible operating systems. And maybe Shemeya Ka'ona is utilizing the programming of Hira Kedibor, or maybe Shlichus. Let's try to examine each. Hi. What's your name?
Amy?
Amy, yes.
Is it the idea of Hirur
only in the case of Shemeya? Oh, not only that. The case is, Umar here is talking about somebody who's not able to make a bracha for halachic reasons. It comes up in a couple of places. But there are a couple of issues. Let's take it one at a time. Let's consider each possibility. So to say that Shemeya Ka'ona is utilizing Hirur Kedibur, is that a strong theory? Is that a weak theory?
Well, you wouldn't necessarily need to be able to do it yourself if it's just hirhur kedibur.
So what do you mean it wouldn't count?
It wouldn't be a requirement.
Oh, say they're going
to
cast.
It wouldn't be a requirement is to be able to do it yourself if it's hirhur kedibur.
Ah, okay, you're talking about the fact that when we talk about Shemeya Ka'ona, there are requirements for who is qualified to be the speaker.
Yes.
Right, what's your name?
Aaron.
Aaron, okay, you're qualified to be the speaker on this point, because that is a good point. Right, so if Hirur Kedibur is at play, so then what do I need that the person who's speaking be somebody who is obligated in the mitzvah? And the words, to continue the words in the Rambam, right after where we stopped, when he said, Harezek Mavarech, he goes on to say, V'hu Sheyia HaMavarech Chayiv V'osa Bracha. That is assuming that the one who's making the bracha is obligated in the bracha. Question about that?
What's
your name?
Yaakov. Say that to Aaron's point. Said like it's your
Which one, sir?
That Aaron's point. if it's the human computer, who simply needs anyone to be the same?
Right, so then it could be that you don't need that. But even if we want to say, okay, you weren't thinking about it until somebody said it, but why should we have any requirements for who it is? Why don't we put a tape recorder, have a computer program read the bracha to us, and we'll be thinking about it, and that'll be just as good. And this comes up on the same daf and bracha. Tosfos of the Kiva Eger raises this question, because the Gemara there on the same daf and bracha is in that daf. The Gemara asks about whether women are obligated in benching Minhag Torah. Whether women are obligated to bench. So the focus of the Gemara, whether they're obligated to bench Minhag Torah or not. So the Gemara says, well, who cares? So they're obligated one way or another. So what difference does it make whether it's Minhag Torah or not? So the Gemara says, the difference is that we want to know if she can be motzi her husband. That if, let's say, the wife and the husband are both ready to bench. So can the woman bench, and the husband will listen, and he'll be yotzei midin shomei kol. Because if she's not as obligated as he is, if he's obligated min haTorah, and she's only obligated midrabbanan, it's not going to work. So ask Aaron, well, why not? Right, why don't we just say that it's here a kedibur? So then she'll be saying the words, he'll be thinking the words. Doesn't matter. Why is chiyuv a requirement? And if you see in source 17, Rabbi Akiva Eger in his comments in the Mishnayos, Tosfos in the Mishnayos, he asked that question. See the source 17, Oslamin Mahara Belibo. So he notes that Ravina already told us here at Kedibor. And Ravina is the same one, the second line here, who's asking this question, Nashim Repsimad and Darais and Rabbanan Lamay Nafgamina, Lafuke Rabbi Medechavasa, where they can be motzi others. So if you ask the question, Hala Ravina Memeli Yotze. The Ravina himself would say he's Yotze no matter what. He didn't hear her because he's thinking about the words. So why does it matter whether she's obligated or not? So that's one big question. Right, that if Shomei Kaona is piggybacking on Hirurs, it is using the programming of Hirur Kedibur, then this requirement that it matters who's doing the talking shouldn't be there. And there are some who say in response to this Rabbi Akiva Eger, which makes the question stronger, they say, well, maybe the answer is it depends. That if he just wants to use Hirur Kedibur, he's just saying, okay, I'm going to sit here and think about the words, and because my wife is reminding me what they are, so that'll help me think about them. So okay, fine, that would work. But because he's trying to flip the Shomei Kaona switch, he's using that button, that requires that the speaker be somebody obligated. So apparently they're two different things. They're not built on each other. Another technical issue is that here, a kedibur is a machlokus in the Gemara. It's not such a widely accepted idea. While Shomei Kaona, as far as we know, is universal. Everyone agrees with Shomei Kaona. So it's hard to say that Shomei Kaona is contingent on here, a kedibur when it's much more broadly accepted. So here, a kedibur is a category, is a candidate, but there's some issues. It's not perfect. Hi.
Based on this concept, why would it mark the source for it?
Oh, it's a very good question also. I want to come back to that. See, if we're assuming that it's totally on something else, then maybe we shouldn't be the source. I want to come back to that. But here a kedibur could have covered us, but we see some issues. It doesn't explain the rules of Shomei Kaona, and it doesn't line up as far as universality. Not perfect for that reason. Sam, you said...
Sam
said, what about shlichus? Right? We know that there is a concept in halacha. Shlucho shaladam kamoso. That if I ask somebody to do a mitzvah on my behalf, so I was at a bris this morning, so the father had an obligation to give a bris milah to his son. He asked the mohel to do it on his behalf, and he was in fulfillment of the mitzvah. Shlucho shaladam kamoso. So is that a good model here? Can we say, all right, I'm going to use the shliach to read the Megillah for me, to make Kiddush for me? Yaakov. Yeah,
shlichus is like doing it for you, not doing it, and you're like kind of
Okay. All right. That's, you have to flesh out a little what that means. But maybe, I don't know if this is what you're getting at, but one issue is,
we come to a point.
Okay, but here, the appointment can be implicit. So let's assume that it's implicit here. But maybe what you're getting at is that if I ask a shliach to do a mitzvah for me, so that I don't have to do anything after that. So I can be asleep in bed while the person is performing the mitzvah on my behalf. So I don't have to be in the room. I don't have to be in the same time zone. And yet, Shemaya Kaona seems like I do have to still do something. I have to be listening. If it was pure shlichus, why can't I just say, okay, you go to shul for me in Purim and here in Megillah, and I'm going to go somewhere else. So that's already a little different than shlichus.
But there is a machlokes in terms of how shlichus works exactly, mm-hmm. meaning if shlichus is working in terms of yada or rechta, then you would actually need to be awake.
How do you know?
Because
you're saying you have to be conscious.
You have to be conscious because of the yada rechta. But if it's in terms of that he's considered a separate person, but it's considered as if you're doing it, mm-hmm. then you wouldn't necessarily need to be awake. So it could be in terms of how you...
Okay, but either way, you don't have to be there.
Yeah.
So here, so Yaakov is correct. There seems to be a more of a requirement than normal shlichus that you have to be doing something. You have to be listening. Also, shlichus itself is limited. And the limitation that's usually invoked is that of the Tosus Rid in his commentary to Kedushin, where he says that shlichus clearly doesn't work for everything. Right? It doesn't work for lulav. It doesn't work for tefillin. So he says, what's the parameters for when shlichus works and when it doesn't work? It depends. If it's a result-based mitzvah, like you said, you have to make sure your son gets a bris milah. Okay, so that you can use a shliach. If it's a mitzvah that you have to physically do, what the Tosfos Rid called a mitzvah shebegufo, so then somebody else can't do that for you. Shlichus is not going to work for eating matzah. It's not going to work for taking a lulav. So if you have a mitzvah to say something, so then how does it work that you could have someone else say it on your behalf? That sounds like a mitzvah shebegufo. So shlichus is not perfect either. But, despite our imperfections, and we'll have to try to explain it a little bit more, but these two candidates, each one with its weakness, could line up along the lines of what we've been discussing so far. That here who are kedibor, that correlates to what translation of Shemaya Kaona? The comparing of actions. Right, that just like one person could think, and it's as if he's talking. So if I listen to someone else, it's as if I'm talking. While shlichus, what does shlichus mean? It means that somebody else is doing something, and I'm credited for it. However, the lumbus exactly works, and this I'm going the whole story, but it's basically that idea. So Shemaya Kaona could mean like that, that somebody else is talking, and I am credited with the whole package of what he's doing. So if that's the case, these two theories, they could perhaps account for the differences that we see as far as how Shemaya Kaona is interpreted. Those who see it as listening is like speaking, they see it in the Hebrew Kedibur vein. Those who understand it as the listener is credited with whatever the speaker is doing, they see that as more of a shlichus kind of model. Now, let's try to expand on the shlichus model for a second. Because, like we said, it's not really perfect. Because normally, the shliach can do a mitzvah, you don't have to be there. And the mitzvah like speech, it's not so clear that that should be eligible for shlichus. So, how could you have a concept like shlichus match an idea like Shemaya Kaona? Yes, sir. Tell me your name, sorry. Avi, yes.
What about, like, on, like, over the phone, like, hearing Shemaya Kaona and the Megillah over the phone?
Yeah, the phone is a big question. We'll see if we have time for that. We have to finish this point first. I'm not sure. We have to come back sometime and talk about issues with over the phone and microphones. It's a whole other complicated discussion. Very important, practical issue. But setting that aside for the moment, so, how does shlichus and Shemaya Ka'ona fit better? How can we make it fit better? So you could say like this. And a good example that would make this especially clear is, let's talk about Kiddush, for example. Just to illustrate this nicely. That maybe when you have a mitzvah that is about speech, maybe the mitzvah is not really about speech, but maybe it has two parts to it. You say something, and as you're saying it, you also hear yourself saying it, and that accomplishes some mitzvah purpose. So really, there are two separate things happening at the same time. You are creating the sound, and you are hearing yourself create the sound, and that sound is meaningful for some mitzvah purpose. This works especially well if we think about Kiddush, right? So we say we have a mitzvah to recite Kiddush. How do you know you have a mitzvah to recite Kiddush from the Torah? How do you know that? The Torah says, speak out the words of Kiddush. Zachar, Soma Shabbos L'Kadosh. Right? So it's particularly relevant there. The Torah doesn't say Kiddush. The Torah says, you should remember Shabbos. And we assume that you remember Shabbos by saying the words of Kiddush. But really, the saying the words is a means to the end. And the actual zechira happens because you hear yourself say the words. So that's where the mitzvah is really happening. That's where the real goal is. So maybe what Shemaya Ka'ona means is that many of these mitzvahs of speech, saying Kiddush, reading the story of Purim and the Megillah, the real purpose of the mitzvah is you should tell yourself about these things. You should remind yourself about Kiddush. You should tell yourself the story of the miracle of Purim. But in order to do that, it has to be spoken out loud so you can hear it. So there's two steps. You have to say it, then you have to hear yourself saying it. But the first step is really a means to an end. It's really creating that sound so that you can hear it. So Chazal tell us the first part, that can be given out to somebody else. That if you have somebody else say the words, that will also accomplish the goal of your hearing it and remembering it. But with this we can understand it's got to be somebody who's a part of the mitzvah, because this is still a component of how the mitzvah is fulfilled. It's not only a means to an end. It is a part of the practice of the mitzvah. But it's not the whole purpose of the mitzvah. So the purpose of the mitzvah you have to do yourself. That's a mitzvah shebegufo, to actually hear the words. So you have to be present to hear the words so that you can fulfill it. But a necessary part of that is that they have to be spoken as a part of the mitzvah. But that's the means to an end. You can have somebody else do that, and you will also be equally in fulfillment. And like the Shagasari said, not b'di'evet in fulfillment, you'll be exactly in fulfillment. You'll be the exact same mitzvah as if you said it yourself, as long as the person doing the speaking is also obligated in the mitzvah. Hi.
That's true, then you wouldn't need to read from a clock. And you honestly don't have to look at it, you just listen to it the whole time.
Except that the mitzvah has conditions. So that if, let's say, Kiddush Alakos, if you assume Alakos is the right, which the big level probably isn't, but let's assume for argument's sake that Alakos is really part of the mitzvah, you know, level Menat Torah. So then what the Torah is saying is, remember Shabbos, and we remember it by listening to its words in a formal way over a cup of wine. So if somebody else is doing the speaking, holding a cup of wine, so then we're also partaking of that. But the wine still has to be there. Again, most of the Rishonim hold it's not part of the mitzvah Menat Torah, but just for argument's sake, that would still be a part of it, and you're partaking by listening to the Kiddush that's recited al
Hakor. And then where we would assume a Megillah part of that idea of Zachor.
Is that a shirat from a kosher presentation, from a kosher cloud? So you are partaking in that by listening to it. But the Ikar Mitzvah has rules, and the rule is that it has to be written out and read from that. Right.
It's not reading from a cloth ma'aki, the mitzvah. I thought you just came with a bracha then.
You're not going to fulfill the whole mitzvah. You can fulfill it with 49% if you listen to the words. By other things, you know, say, by other Megillahs that comes up. It's also a separate discussion. But we can talk about that separately also. But in any event, so before we run out of time, there's a lot more to say about this, and there's some very interesting discussions that come out of this. But what seems to be most likely is that between the two, or two possible theories, they're both a little bit challenged, but it seems like shlichus we can adapt to make it work better. But it's not pure shlichus, a different kind of shlichus. So I think this could address the question, I forgot your name, I'm sorry, over there in the corner. So what's your name?
Hoodie.
Hoodie. So I didn't get your name before, that was it. So Hoodie said, so if either Hira Kedibur or shlichus was really the operating system, so then why do we need a Gemara in Sukkah to tell us a pasuk for Shemei Kona? We know it already. We can just piggyback on one of these things. So the answer is, it's not really one or the other. It's its own mitzvah, its own concept, rather. It's its own Kiddush Lahalacha. But it is, in its structure, probably more comparable to Shlichus. Although, it could be one way or the other. It could be that maybe it's comparable to Hira Kedibur, and that's going to explain those who say that we're comparing verbs. Or it could be that it's more comparable to the structure of Shlichus, and that's going to explain the other view, which seems to be the more popular view, Lahalacha. And the way that Chassam Sofer explains it in a tshuva, he says it's a hitstarfus ke'ein Shlichus. It's a partnership that is similar to Shlichus. Not exactly Shlichus, but it takes on the patterns of Shlichus. Essentially, you're able to appoint somebody else to do this on your behalf. I don't have time to say it out now, but if you want an interesting Maramako, Kodjaglovarov was a student of the Avnei Nezer, the Sopachav Rebbe. He wrote fascinating svarim. So he has a sefer called Siach HaSada, which was reprinted a few years ago. There's three big volumes, the Tshuva Seret Tzvi, and the third volume is the Siach HaSada. So the Siach HaSada, he has a lot of things about brachos and the like. So he has a whole discussion there that he sees Shemei Kaona as exactly Shlichus, and he has a few fascinating explanations of some of the dinim that some we've talked about, some we didn't get to talk about, which he explains based on comparing them directly to Shlichus. A very interesting discussion, but perhaps it's more likely to say it's not exactly Shlichus, it's something that is Kain Shlichus, and that could perhaps give us a path to understand how all of this works. So just to quickly review what we spoke about, so we considered the question of how exactly do we understand Shemei Kaona, which can start off with a simple translation issue. How do we translate the word Shemei Kaona? Does it mean the act of listening is like the act of speaking? Or does it mean that the listener is compared to the speaker and credited with whatever he's doing? And we saw that this was a machlokas throughout history. We saw three iterations going back in time. We saw that the Beis Halevi was alleged to have said that Shemei Kaona doesn't work for Birchas Kohanim because the condition of Kol Ram is more than just speech, and Shemei Kaona only works for just speech and nothing else. Although parenthetically we noted that that was a disputed interpretation of the Beis Halevi, but that's how it's quoted. And the Chazon Ish said differently, no, but it's like comparing the speaker to the listener. The listener is credited with the mitzvah. He doesn't actually have to be doing all of the details as long as it starts off in a speech format. And that's why Kiddush Halakos and Megillah from Akash and Megillah is able to be effective. That was one. Then we saw, going back 100 years before that, the machlokas of whether a blind man can get an aliyah. That the Taz said yes, because Shemei Kaona will allow him, now that we have a professional Baal Kore, he can lane through Shemei Kaona. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden says no, because even if he's laning through Shemei Kaona, it's like he's laning Baal Peh, and Baal Peh is not good enough. It has to be from the Torah itself, same machlokas. And going back significantly before that, we saw it seems to be this is machlokas Rashi and Tosus, that Rashi says you can use Shemei Kaona to answer Kaddish and Kedusha while you're in the middle of Shemona Esrei. So apparently it's not a hefsek as far as he's concerned. It's a way of connecting to the person speaking, but it's not as if you're actually speaking. While Tosus says, no, terrible idea. It's going to be exactly as if you're speaking, and therefore it will be a hefsek. And then we added on that the Shibbele Aleka disagreed with both of them, said it's not possible to be Osei through Shemei Kaona when you can't answer or halachically, because you can't fulfill the mitzvah of the Eved if you can't do the lechatil away. And the Shlagas Arya disagreed with that. He said it's not lechatil with the Eved. The whole team doesn't apply here. It's an equally valid approach to how Shemei Kaona can fulfill mitzvahs. So that was phase one. And then we went to phase two, trying to explain how could those two theories, how could they themselves be explained as far as what Shemei Kaona is doing. We saw two possibilities as to what is the operating system of Shemaya Ka'ona. One is Hira Kedibur, the Gemara's representation of Ravina's opinion, that thinking is like speaking, which would correlate to the comparison of verbs. Listening is like speaking. Thinking is like speaking. But we saw some weaknesses with that. It didn't explain why the one speaking had to be Mechuyav B'davar, as Rebbe Eger points out in his questions in the Mishnayos. And also, Shemaya Ka'ona is much more broadly accepted than Hira Kedibur. So then we discussed the question of Shlicha. Shlicha seemed a little bit better as a model, but also a little bit questionable. If it was really Shlicha, you wouldn't have to be there at all. And Shlicha only works for Mitzvah Shemagufo, and this seems the Mitzvah is not Shemagufo, and this seems to be like it is a Mitzvah Shemagufo. How should it work for speech? So then we modified it a little bit, and we suggested that it's comparable to shlichas, but we have to break down the mitzvah, that a speech-oriented mitzvah, especially if you look at Kiddush, for example, is really about two things, about saying something and about hearing yourself say something, and that having a mitzvah relevance. So especially, let's say, Kiddush, Zocher, so Mashab, Zakacho, the mitzvah is really to remember. We do that through speaking, but the goal is to remember. So the purpose is you have to say something and then hear yourself saying it and remember it. So perhaps the shlichas applies to the first part. You can have someone else do the talking as long as they are part of the mitzvah, they're part of this process. They have to be mechuyav b'davar. But then the listening part you have to do yourself, and that's why you have to be there to do that. So it's slightly different how the Chassam Sofer wrote that it was a hitzdarfes ke'en shlichas. It was a partnership that was along the lines of shlichas, and maybe that could explain why it needs its own source, because it still got some key differences from either of these two models. But perhaps as far as where it's getting its inspiration from, so maybe it's more along the lines of shlichus. And these two line back to our original question, here Kedibor being a shmiya kaniya kind of thing, with shlichus being a hitzdarfus kind of idea of you are linked to the speaker and you get everything that he's doing. So far so good, it makes sense, everything okay? All right, well, I thank you so much for listening and for having me here. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the summer. I hope you have a second of it. Should have only continued Hatzlafa and all the things that we do. All right.